right, all right. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. We're here. We're here for you. It's you and I. It's both of us. It's me and Carolyn. Together, we are the Carolyn Joe Show! How's it going, Carolyn? How you doing, Carolyn?
I feel like I'm in a tunnel.
You feel like you're in a tunnel? The
yes.
Tunnel. Tunnel of love.
Tunnel vision audio. The tunnel of love.
Tunnel of love. That's how we're doing.
Is there like a swans and you're riding the swans?
No.
You know what?
I don't know if I've ever ridden a swan,
but I kind of want to.
Ridden a swan? How are you
Have
supposed
you
to ride
those?
A swan?
No, like not like a real swan, but like those swan boats. Have you seen
oh,
those?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know exactly. Like one of those, the Tunnel of Love romantic sets. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Have I ever ridden those?
You're asking me?
I don't know. Do you recall me ever riding one?
I don't know if I've been in touch.
I kind of want to.
I believe that answer is in your own mind. And just as a reminder, everyone, I'm Joe Carabea. I'm a filmmaker, a director, a writer, a comic book writer as well. And across from me is also one of the greatest cartoonists that you guys will ever see in your whole entire world, Karen Bolesky. We are here. We're giving you a piece of our life. And there are no more Ramones. All the Ramones are gone. That's why I'm playing this Ramones song. Here today, gone tomorrow. All the remaining Ramone members are now dead.
Wow.
So people are saying it's the end of punk. I don't think you can ever just claim that's the end of punk, but it's...
But isn't there like a Cadillac commercial that talks about how it comes from a garage?
Yeah.
And the Ramones comes from a garage.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, because like everyone has a Cadillac in their garage.
Yeah, even though I think Ramones at the basement, but I'm not sure. It's Carolyn's news coming up.
Oh my gosh, it's my news. I gotta get ready. I'm running a little bit late. Okay, here we are. I have all the info. Okay. Curl Studio will be at Supernova Comic-Con in the Leesburg Firehouse this coming Sunday, which is July 20th.
That's in a few days.
Oh my gosh, it is in a few days. And we'll be there from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Not only that, but we will also have tons of goodies for you. Pounds of goodies for you. Because we will be distributing for free Magic Bullet number 9, which is Washington, D.C.'s comics newspaper that I edit.
This is the premiere.
This is the release. It is the premiere. You can't get it anywhere else beforehand. So I can't stress how amazing that is and quite an opportunity for you to lay your hands on some printed newsprint and smell the ink. This, you know, a lot of people don't get that opportunity these days. This is a rare opportunity to physically touch something.
That's right.
And not only that, this is This is our Western issue. And Nick Galifianakis did the cover for us. It looks amazing. Only like a few people have seen this cover.
I'm about to see it. I was like, seriously? We're going to do this show first, then we're going to see the cover.
Only, I think, maybe like 3 people have seen this cover. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's a really well put together issue. And again, come this Sunday at the Supernova Comic Con at Leesburg Firehouse, which is 215 Loudoun Street, Southwest, Leesburg, Virginia, from 10 to 3 this Sunday, July 20th. The admission price is only $4. And if you have kids under 12 years of age, they are free. And if you show your military ID, you get $2 admission. Pretty sweet deal. Not only that, there are door prizes, and drawings will be held at 11 a.m., 12:30 p.m., and 2 p.m. And also, Greg LaRocque will be there, Andy Smith will be there, Tom Rainey will be there, Steve Conley will be there, and I will be there as a guest. That is pretty sweet lineup. Yeah,
Steve Conley is one of the greatest ones around, too.
I know, and he did a Magic Bullet cover for us a couple issues back.
Yeah.
And not only that...
That cover is a crucial spot.
Not only that, I'm going to be signing Adventure Time books. Can I get some echo on that?
Yes.
Adventure Time! Yeah! I'm going to be signing Adventure Time number 29, which is the cover I did. And that should be really exciting. And it's a collector's item. What can you say? We're providing people with collector's items. But Magic Bullet is free. So you... Why should you be there? I mean, what else are you doing on July 20th?
It's free if you can find it, if you can get to it, and we're telling you where you can be one of the first people to set eyes, to set paws on this issue. This is like a giant size version issue too.
Also, it's the biggest issue I've ever done. I can't remember the page count off the top of my head. But I did add on an extra 8 pages compared to what we have done in the past.
So it's like an extra 8. It's like a grand slam.
It's like an extra 8 comics.
This is the biggest. This is the biggest. Just announce it now. This is the biggest magic bullet ever.
I don't know if it's as big as the End of the World issue, so I'll have to compare.
Okay.
But I don't know if I can officially announce that right now. But we had more pages for comics. And that's always a good thing.
All right.
So, yeah. Wow, I'm so excited. Yeah, Supernova Comic Con. Having me as a guest.
I'll just say that it's the biggest issue ever. This is the biggest issue. This Magic Bullet number 9 is the biggest issue ever.
It is. Of all time.
Of all time.
All right.
Of all time.
Yeah. So that's the big news. I mean, I'm excited to be at Supernova Comic Cons because we've never done that show before. I just found out about it.
So hopefully they're getting some deals, see some awesome artists, being at a new show. It's a place to be, I think.
It is. There's a lot of exciting things happening. And then in the fall, which, I'm not going to get too involved with it on the news because we still have several months, but we will be at Baltimore Comic Con and at Small Press Expo and at New York Comic Con. So those are 3 big shows this fall.
Absolutely.
And also Baltimore and SPX are back-to-back, weekend to weekend. So, and that's 2 big things in Maryland. People should just, stay in Maryland, the whole week. They're just I'm not going to leave because there's, 2 major comic conventions.
Maryland is a pretty big place, so maybe stay in that area, right?
I mean, there's so much to do. You could also, just hang out in D.C. during that time.
Maryland does sort of span, a whole entire... Whole entire state, man. Yeah, whole entire highway district area conglomerate, I guess.
Maryland is an interesting
state. The 495 does the whole 495.
Cause I have good memories of Maryland. I do think the drivers are worse there, though.
Oh yeah.
I think so. I think they have a bad reputation for drivers. But I will say, growing up, my memory of Maryland is my granddad's house was in Bethesda. So I have, good memories of that. And also, I love the Maryland state flag. There's, a lot of people that really think it's disgusting, but I love it. And I actually would wear, a Maryland state flag dress. If somebody makes me one, I will wear it.
Why would people say that the Maryland state flag is pretty disgusting?
Well, first of all, it is kind of, gaudy, I guess, but, in a good way.
What is the definition of gaudy? It's not really a word I use or, phrase or anything.
The way I personally use gaudy is, really gross, gold Italian furniture.
like Michael Jackson stuff?
Yeah, Michael Jackson's house. It's, too overly exuberant and, too much and, yeah. Trying to be, outlandish and stuff. That's my personal definition of it. I don't know what Webster would say. But, basically, the Maryland state flag, if you don't know about it, I'll try my best to describe it, because it is kind of hard to describe it, but basically, it's sanctioned off into, 4 square, or 4 rectangles, and then, it's kind of a checkerboardish look, but one of them is red and white, and the other one is, a goldish yellow and black.
Yeah.
And then it's, all checkerboard, but within also those 4 rectangles, so it's kind of like a triple checkerboard thing, but not everything is squares. They have different shapes within those shapes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps to actually visualize it if you've never seen the Maryland state flag before, but if you've never seen it, you can probably go on the internet and look it up. But yeah, I seriously would wear a really kick-ass Maryland state flag dress. For some reason I've been dreaming of this for 15 years to have a Maryland state flag dress. I've never, commissioned it or anything, but if anyone out there is a seamstress and wants to make me one, I will wear it, and I will wear it at, one of these conventions, which would be hilarious and funny and really cool and also saluting, but yeah, Maryland, what other memories of... I also have, good Charlotte memories, because they are from Waldorf, and they are the heroes of that state. and
they're the heroes of Maryland.
Yes. You know, there's also the Maryland Terrapins.
What did you say? Wait, didn't you say that because it's funny, it's you say like Good Charlotte is like the hero of the punk rockers, Good Charlotte are like the of the like the heroes of Maryland in your perspective. And it's funny because like you're just saying something, or even like the history of Benji and Joel, like, because there was a time when they were both going out with the Simple Life of the crew of Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton.
Yes.
And you were like wondering like how is that even possible?
I was like, two guys from Maryland, somehow finding like the most socialite, like richest girls in LA.
And you think that's because people think it's weird because they wrote a song about you know, lifestyles of rich and famous, yeah. And all of a sudden they're like, now, you
and
know,
now
with the,
like
that pinnacle
them.
Of those socialites, yeah. Like Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton.
It is pretty interesting. And now Benji's actually dating Cameron Diaz.
How do you think that even happens? How does those
how
two...
How they meet them?
How does that situation happen? Because, like, there's a lot of people, you know, would you'd look at them and you're like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like these
actually,
dudes
you know,
from Maryland. It's
Cameron
like,
Diaz and Benji, I can kind of see that. You know, I don't really know them in real life, but I can see that happening.
Why is that?
I feel like Cameron Diaz, like, can be a really fun chick, and I think she just wants to, you know, have fun and not really take things so seriously. I think Benji's kind of like that, too. But then they also want to, like, have good careers. Does that make sense? Like, also, you know, I've read online, like, I didn't spend that much time on it, but when it was first announced that he was dating Cameron Diaz, which was announced probably, like, a month or so ago, I guess they announced it on Ryan Seacrest's show in L.A. Morning.
They both announced it as like...
Well, it was kind of like hinted at, but he didn't officially confirm it, but then he confirmed it like a day later or something. Like, it was pretty obvious, though.
For people who don't know how like those lead the two brothers of Good Charlotte look like, how exactly would you describe them? Because they have tattoos. They're like punk rockers.
They have tattoos.
But they're not really like, oh, I'm punk, but they just have that aesthetic to it.
I mean, they are kind of more punk. They kind of like actually overlap a lot of musical genres. But yeah, they have tattoos. Benji, like, is a fighter as well. He does boxing. And they like music. I mean, they seem pretty versatile and creative. But yeah, they're not like your, like, typical, like, pretty boy, like a George Clooney or something. Like, you know, if people are expecting all these Hollywood actresses to be, like, dating Clooney or I don't know what people's expectations are, you know, like, but I guess Cameron Diaz did have a long time relationship with Justin Timberlake, and I think that's how she might have met Benji and Joel, from going to all the music award shows,
yeah.
Or just going on those tours, because I think that Good Charlotte did tour with Justin Timberlake, and maybe that's how they met. So I can see, like, and also, like, you know how they always go to Nick Kids Choice Awards and stuff like,
yeah.
That I can totally see, like, how they bump into each other backstage and So that doesn't faze me at all. But it is funny, because if you actually have been to Waldorf and, like, drive through it, I mean, it's not, like, the best place. And also, like, I remember...
the best place.
I mean, seriously, I'm not trying to offend anybody that does live there, because I'm sure somebody could say that about, like, the town that I live in, especially, like, someone like Daniel Bryan. But, like, what I'm getting at is...
I remember that, so we gotta bring that back up. It's hilarious.
But what I'm getting at is, you know... You look at people that work in Waldorf and that are in Waldorf, and I just don't see any connection to Hollywood. Or, like, a Paris Hilton there. Like, it's just kind of actually totally, like, opposite side of the tracks.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, I guess it's cool that, like, if that's... It seemed like they wanted to always have, like, a good lifestyle, or I shouldn't say necessarily good, but, like, you know, they always wanted to have, like... riches or like that type of like lifestyles and rich and the famous, like it seemed like they always did kind of want to aim for that. Like, who would want to stay in Waldorf if you know what I mean? Like,
well, it's funny because I have a friend, because Jessica, I guess, grew up in Waldorf, and I always ask her, like, Jessica from the Awesome Con commercial and the movie the Magic Trick, she grew up in Waldorf or in that area, and I was always asking her, so like, so what do they have in Waldorf, what's so cool? And she's always like, nothing. It's not really anything there.
I mean, there really isn't, because, like, we've driven through there for some comic shows, and, I wasn't really too impressed. I know, like, I've read in Rolling Stone magazine that Benji and Joel used to work at Golden Corral, and they were like, yeah, literally there's a corral for, like, fat people to just come through and eat food. And I can totally see that, because you look outside in the parking lot, you just see, like, people just walking around corralling and going to their diner and stuff,
so,
you know?
So it sort of does make sense for them, you know, because I guess, you know, if they weren't really loving where they were living, that's the goal, is always just to get out of that town and make it big, you know? Yeah. That's always, like, the dream.
I mean, if you listen to, like, a lot of their lyrics, it really is, like, about, like, just busting out and, like, being yourself and making something better than as best as you can,
and then making money off of their music, and then also, like, you know, because Nicole Richie's pretty up, you know, up there as, like, you know, now, like, a pretty good name going on.
I mean, she also has, like, her own clothing line and jewelry and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know how that all works out, but I mean, she does have name value. Everyone knows who she is,
and they,
like,
always,
even people that don't pay attention to it know who. My mom knows who she is.
I always think it's pretty great because they always, Good Charlotte and their lyrics, they always talked about, like, oh, selling out, like, people saying that, like, they're not punk enough, or they sold out by having, like, their music and then making money off of that stuff. And I always find that to be, like, that was one of those things I was always torn against in my own head, like, growing up. You know, and I'd listen to punk music, and then people would throw around like the term of selling out, like, oh, you're making money, like, that. There's always that artist thing. It's like, oh, if you're making money, then it's not off your work. It's not really, like, true or right. And I always found that, like, I don't know. There's that, like, I'm always torn between, like, oh, you, what is the pure artist? And then, oh, you're making money off of that thing. That's wrong. And I'm always, like, in my head, I've always had that big battle with people like that. It's one thing. I remember when I started working on films, it's like, oh, I'll do this for free. You know what I mean? I'll do this for free. And then I realized, like, I don't want to freaking do this for free.
People take advantage of you.
Yeah, people will take advantage of you. And then I like, hearing people, like, say that stuff, like, oh, this is not about, they always say it's not about the money, or they always make that as, like, an excuse. Like, oh, they're just doing this to make more money. And I'm always sort of like, I can understand from, like, because now, you know, like, making our own books and having, and me having to push my own films and doing all of that stuff, how it's like, is that wrong to try to make money off of that? How am I going to pay bills? It's like, it's this weird thing. It's like, oh, you're not street enough. You're supposed to be an artist and be sort of, like, not making anything, and then you're respectable. But the moment you make money, then we don't respect you enough, or it's all about business and stuff like that. And I'm just like, I don't know, man. What is there actually a right or wrong here?
It's very strange, because I even remember, like, my first couple jobs, I would actually tell people, like, I'd go around and be like, I don't really care about getting paid, I just want to do, like, all this creative work. And, like, a couple people, like, that were older, I remember this guy at my first job, he's a lot older, and he was like, no, you should get paid. You want to get paid. You know, like, he'd tell me that, but I was just like, I would work for free if I could. Like, I had, like, this dumb mentality, but now I'm like, in my head, like, my tide has switched, because I don't think I full-on had that artist mentality, but I still had that mentality of, like, I could do this for free. I love it so much.
What was that? There's always that starving artist. There's always that line, right?
Yeah, I never really wanted to be a starving artist.
But that was always, like, a line people were saying, and
yeah,
if you do it for the money, it's wrong.
But now my tide has changed, because, like...
Your tide has changed.
No, because the thing is, like, honestly, I can't say that I would go around being like, I love this so much, I would do it for free. Like, because I used to say that, like, even, like, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And now I would be like, no, you pay me. Like, I'm not doing anything for free.
But why is that? What happens when it takes that sort of turn? Because that, to me, I remember saying those things. I remember being like, no, man, I'll work on your movie for free. It's all, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. And then, you know, things happen that, like, sort of take it away.
Well,
what happened to you to make that sort of,
like,
if that
really
happened, what happened to take that away?
You have to make payments on things. Like, I mean, you have to think about where you're going to live, what you're going to eat for food. All of that stuff,
But was that the moment where you're like, I should be making money off of this? Or was there a moment that made you think, like, you know what, I should be getting paid?
It was more like, I should be getting paid more.
Yeah.
Like, I'd look at it and I'd be like, you know what, I actually think my skills are worth more than this.
And that's the one thing, I think I even heard it from Jerry Lawler. If you're going to do anything, why do it for free? If you do something good, why do it for free?
Yeah.
And it's true.
I don't even, like, it makes me feel silly that I used to think that way. Like, I'm like, what type of stupid young person was I?
Do you think, is that one of those things where it's like, when you're young, you're like, I'll do it anything? I'll do anything for
free.
You want
to get your foot in the door, you know? And as an artist, it does kind of suck because people do take advantage of you. People are looking for those people. They don't want to pay for something. They're like, well, I can just get... You know, I always hear also like, oh, I can... My cousin knows Photoshop. I can do get him to do it. That's okay.
That's like the worst. But I feel like that's what a lot of people are trying to get free creative stuff.
I mean, it happens all the time, too. Like, RFPs. Like, you know, you have 20 companies... trying to submit a proposal for this job.
They gotta do a pitch.
You have to do this big pitch. And like
or a bid. They call it a bid.
Spend lots of time on it. And then truthfully, what ends up really happening is like, you know, yeah, they have to pick one. But the truth of the matter is they can take all those ideas if they really want to. And then they get like free creative. It's kind of messed up the way the industry is, but that's how it works, you know? I mean, even like you
and
hear
that's
about...
a sense for like advertising or just working on a project.
Advertising.
Everyone bids on the same, on like the big job everyone wants.
Yeah, and like advertising is probably the worst of it because even that, like they can even get like all these portfolios in from people. They just like steal like design ideas or like color palettes. And I mean, I'm not saying like when you steal a color palette, that doesn't necessarily mean like a, you know, it's not like, oh my God, you stole my whole life, you know,
well, because,
but
like,
they get inspired by something because as artists, there's no way around it. You know what I mean? Like you could see a particular color and be like, oh, I want to use that on a future project too.
But also at the same time, it's like, I guess in that situation of seeing a color palette, you could see a color palette anywhere.
Yeah.
It just happens to be you, someone presented you this color palette, but also you could see a color palette in fashion and be like, I want to use that color palette in my thing.
I mean, maybe that's a dumb example, but I guess what I'm getting at is it's
like how it gets in your presence.
Like let's say like I'm hiring somebody and I'm like, oh, send me all of your, you know, design portfolios. And then like I get like 100 portfolios. I mean, I can flip through them and take ideas after ideas after ideas. Just take them all. That's what happens. I mean, that's why creativity sometimes gets recycled too, and that's why you see trends. And then after a while, the trends just break down, and then like it's not even worth anything anymore.
And is that one of the reasons why? Is that one motivation to be like, listen, dude, these people are getting it just for free. I need to get something in return.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, after a while, or sometimes, you know, I don't really get. I think like I've been less jealous now than I have been in the past, but sometimes you look at like other people. And you find out that maybe they might be making more money than you. Or you just, like, find out because you're just like, for some reason it feels like they have a lot more stuff going on than me. And they're going on vacation all the time or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, they probably are getting paid more than me. And I'm just, like, slaving away. And then, like, you know, it makes you think, like, maybe I should be worth more or something. You know, like, stuff like that just makes you think that you need to value yourself more. And I'm still learning that. Because it's hard, like... Like, there is a small, still that little small part of me that's like, I love to be creative. I'll do anything, you know, because I'm just so passionate about it. But in reality, like, you need to get paid and you need to be appreciated for your work, you know.
I feel like that's what it comes down to is, like, we're respected and appreciated for your work. That's really, like, that's what I feel that it lacks when people get it for free or when people take it for free. That's from people and they're trying to take advantage of people. That's what I feel that's happening is... It's a lack of respect for the whole entire medium and the work ethic. They're not because you can get compensated in a way. You can get compensated little, but as long as it's as much as that person as that client can give you, I feel like is respectable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's sometimes people don't have a lot of money, and they're like, oh, well,
I mean,
all we have,
and
yeah,
stuff.
All we have is this much. Can you take that? I'm like, all right, cool. But like when you know they're just really trying to shim you as much as possible, then
you're just
like, there's no respect.
You're
there.
Like, somebody's got to have a payday here.
If they really, there's a lot of things that I see too. Yeah, someone's of course getting payday, but there's a lot of things I see too. Is that like, you know, you there's that line of you get what you pay for, and of course, like even in my like in the photo world, you know, they're like, oh, well, this other person has this camera, I'll just get him to hire it. It's like, well, you get what you pay for. The photos will turn out like crap. You know what I mean? Well, this one's cheaper, and then. It's that weird sort of balance of,
I mean,
like, you know, you it really is. You get what you pay for. But at the same time, you should be getting paid something. I remember there's one of the first lessons I learned is when, and this is overall, like, me and Jacob Pulliam, you know, way back in the day when we first started out, of course, we were trying to make music videos for bands. We made a lot of music videos and filmed a lot of bands. We're trying to build up our own name, so we're doing that and getting that out as much as possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there was a time where we, you know, we slaved over making a video, and he gave it to like the band, and you know, we spent all that time and got paid like nothing, literally. And then the band, like, takes the DVD and literally right in front of Jake, like, the girl turns to the rest of the band's like, oh, cool. Hey, guys, now we can, like, sell this DVD, man, and make money, you know? And then, like, in our head, when Jake told that to me, and then Jake was like, so they're going to go make all this money off of this DVD that we slaved all these hours for and shooting and editing and, you know, making sure every cut's in the right place and all the pain, and you get paid nothing, and they're going to go make lots of money off of it, off of our work, and we get nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, at that, you know, those were the days where I was like, no, we'll do this for free until we make it big. I think that was one of those moments where you're like, dude, someone's going to take your hard-ass work and make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah, that is, like, a moment where you realize that you're taking advantage of.
Yeah.
You're being taken advantage of. And also, like, you know, I will say, when you're in college, almost nobody has money. It's not like they, you know, even
especially
if there's
musicians,
like a college band, they can't really pay you. At the most, like, they should be able to pay for a sandwich for you or something, you know, like a lunch or a dinner.
I just remember starting out and having so many interactions with bands and musicians saying, we're going to make it. And I still hear this today. And it's like, and people wonder, a lot of people wonder, and I'm not trying to be an asshole about it, but I'm going to be an asshole about it. But whenever someone comes to me with like, we need to do a video for this person, they're going to make it big. You know, I really believe they're good people. And I just heard it this week and it pissed me off about like, oh, and you're going to get exposure. I've been hearing that line. That was one of the biggest lines I've heard, like, since starting out, like, working in the film industry and film production. Is like, oh, this hip-hop artist is gonna be massive, we need to make a music video for them, we need to do this and that. And then where are these freaking people not wanting to pay? And then, of course, they're not gonna give anything in return. It's the same thing even with, like, you know, they never do. And it's always that, like, oh, you'll get exposure and it's gonna be more work in down the line. I heard that so many times. And it never freaking happens. I'm like, just pay me now so we can get it over with, or so I can respect it. Like, oh, we can't do this, because I know you're not gonna go back to me, because I'm gonna bust my ass, and then you're not gonna return it. You're just gonna go to the next person that you happen to see at the club who says, oh, I can make you a hotter video. You know, there's no respect. I feel like there was no respect there. There was no, like, courtesy at the time. It's like, when you get it for free, it's cool. We got it for free. We're done. We don't have to go back. But when you have I almost feel like there's a longer connection when you owe someone money. I think it sounds weird, but it's like when you owe someone money, in a way, it's sort of like, well, I guess we owe this person this or that. And I don't know. It's one of those things that got really frustrated. And also just that line of like, oh, you're going to get so much exposure. I have heard so many people who, like, even with the 48-hour film festival that comes out, and people are trying to work with these big companies that are, like, doing the 48-hour film festival. And they're like, oh, yeah, if we work with them, they're for free on that 48-hour film festival, we're going to get jobs and stuff like that. And they never get jobs.
The sad but true thing is, probably almost every young creative has been through a story like this.
Oh, yeah.
Where they've been neglected or abused or just taken advantage of.
It's like, that's that paying the dues part, and it sucks.
It does suck.
But also, like, you've been saying this, they don't really teach that business in school.
Yeah, exactly. They don't teach it in school. And that's, like, one thing that I really wish that they have. And hopefully they might have it now. I haven't checked the curriculum. But, like, basically, I would love to have at least one class that is business for artists. And because they hardly went over any contracts, they hardly went over any of that stuff, and you really have to be protective, because, man, people are looking for suckers.
And also, I totally understand that people don't really want to, people, artists, I don't count myself as an artist, but, like, I see, you know, who wants to go through the legalities? Like, that's not fun. You know what I mean? But it's, like, stuff you have to do if you want to take your stuff to the next level or almost be taken seriously.
Or, like, be freelance, you know? Like, if you're freelance, man, it's all on you. And, you know, who knows? Maybe some legal trouble could happen and you have to look out for yourself.
Yeah.
But that's why a lot of people do like having a day job at the same time, because it's like they don't have to worry about that. They just come in, do their work, and, you know, the employer has to worry about all of that legality and all that stuff, which...
And they have a team for that.
Which is kind of nice, though. But at the same time, like, you know, if you want to do more creative projects sometimes, you have to be freelancing. And that's how you can really, like, feel like true ownership of your work. It's definitely a hard thing. Like, I mean, a lot of... it's really sad, too. This is a sad but true story, but there's been, like, two people that I've had conversations with that were interested in being artists. They're probably, like, 10 years younger than me. and or interested also in going to the school that I went to, which was VCU, and they were like super into art. And I tell them about it, and they did not choose to go forward of being an artist. I don't necessarily know if it was strictly because of my conversation with them.
All through school, people are always like, no, don't be an artist. Be a veterinarian.
Be a veterinarian.
Be a nurse. That's, you know, something that's like, because like arts in a way, it's that career is like, it's not a necessity. It's not a necessity job. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's not like, we need police officers. We need... It's like,
you know what, I told that story also to like very highly respectable cartoonists that I see occasionally, and you know, I'm like, well, we're not really, you know, our profession honestly is not like a high level, like we need this is an urgent special profession.
Yeah.
And they were like, they actually like countered me, and they were like, you know, I have to disagree with you because like, you know, we do things that makes people feel happy, and yeah, like that's true though. But now, I mean, they're definitely right. But at the same time, it's like, if this is a life or death situation, if you're like, you know, in panic mode and you're gonna, I'd rather, you know, to a certain extent, as much as I don't like doctors, it's like you kind of have to go to the doctor versus going to the cartoonist.
It's funny because when the world ends, what's really going to be left is the arts and crafts that were left over. You know what I mean? It's people are going to see architecture. They're going to see paintings that are left over. Or I guess not really, because
they're going to see the internet.
Now everything's going to be online. So the first thing that's going to go is the fucking internet.
Yeah,
the apocalypse,
all gonna
that's
going to
be fucking.
Away.
Yeah, it's just going to be deleted so fast.
Everything once, can just get deleted
this,
in one
remember
button.
This. Once electricity is gone, fuck all the internet. All that shit's gone. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Once whatever genius of a world conqueror who. If an alien being wants to come over and take over the world.
Just hit that button.
Be like, I got this lightning rod that removes all your electricity. You're fucked. Good night.
That's what's funny, too, when you look back on, like, world history. Like, art is so, like, substantial. They're like, this is how people looked back then. Or, like, this is how, you know, this is hieroglyphics. And this is how they wrote. This is the ancient language. And, you know, you get so much out of history and how everybody lived and culture and civilization. And, like, now, we have the internet and all that. But... It's like, people do reference art when it comes down to it.
I mean, clothing we wear, right?
You're always going to need a doctor, though, you know? So, like, art, people don't really think highly of cartoonists necessarily, even though I obviously do, but it's a rough industry. But back to what I was saying about, like, you know, having these interviews with kids and, like, having them, you know, I'm like, hey, ask any question you want. And, like, basically, I don't know if it's strictly because of me, but none of them like chose to really go into it, and I'm like,
how did you know that they chose not to?
I followed up with it because some of it was like one person my mom knew because he was really big with sculpture, and he actually designed some sculptures for the local libraries, and I think he like painted some stuff too. And he was like, you know, from what I could gather, it seemed like he was like one of the top, you know, kids in high school in their art field, you know, and. I was telling him, like, really good things. I'm like, man, VCU is number one in sculpture, like, you know, of all time. Not just within public, but also within private. Like, yeah. they're like, the number one sculpture. I was like, you should definitely, you know, I was like, that's the school to go to. And, like, I don't think he even pursued art at all, but I was telling him how hard it actually is.
But I don't even know how you make a living at a sculpture, man.
I mean, people do. Like, some, if they're, you know, like,
painting,
for example, like,
printmaking.
Hotels need, like, you know, cool sculptures to be in the middle of, you know, this grand place in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
There's, like, sculptures, and there's, you know, they are out there, and there's, like, high-paying patrons of the arts that are willing to have a nice sculpture in their house.
Yeah.
You know, like, if John Cena wants a sculpture with his water park in his house, like, he can get one, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and then the artists, that's how they survive. They'll charge John Cena $100,000 for that, and then that's, like, their payment for the year. Or, also, there's probably, like, bronze fees, which is probably expensive and all that, but, I mean... If they get one or two really good clients, they can actually be doing better off than, like, anybody else working, shifting around, you know? Do you see what I mean?
But we're not making it sound like it's just like, oh, it's a two-week thing or a one-day job.
I mean,
it's like a multiple.
That's, like, probably, like, you can probably do a 6 months or more. I'm just making this up. I don't really know how sculpture works, but, you know, you can work, let's say you work for several months on a sculpture for a high-paying client, like, say, a John Cena.
Yeah.
And John Cena.
John Cena.
No, seriously. And then John Cena's like, seriously, I want this really cool sculpture in my water park for $100,000. And then, you know, like that pays for their year.
Yeah, there you go.
And even more, because that's a lot of money, you know. Yeah. Like, so it's like right there, you can make a living on a sculpture, but you have to find that clientele. And people do find it, but it's hard, you know. It's obviously, like, how many sculptures do you know? I only know one, but
I don't even know any.
I know one professional sculptor that I met at the gym, and because I guess he needed some physical therapy too. But like, I'm just saying that it's a hard thing, and he actually exhibits like in Europe and stuff. So I mean, I guess that's good. Sounds good.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, here's tips for artists. Like, honestly, I know a lot of people want to be artists and they have the passion for it, but I will say it is very hard and I would not recommend it. Like, if somebody wants to go in it, this is the thing. If they really want to go in it after hearing a recommendation not to go in it,
yeah,
then maybe they should. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people that would just shut down and just be like, well, I heard it was hard. I'm not really going to do it.
Is it one of those things where, like, really, it's like you don't know until you have it a go? Like, you got to try it for yourself. Try it for at least 5 years and see if you can do it. So it's weird how when people, I remember when, like, in high school or whatever, they're like, so what do you think? Five-year plan. You know, like, when people ask you, so what's your 5-year plan?
Yeah.
I think now that I'm older and, you know, now that I'm, you know, more progressed, I feel like that's true. It's like you got to have it. You can't really give it a try unless you've done it for like 5 or 3 years and then figure it out. Okay, well, maybe I shouldn't do it.
Even in VCU, the first year you go through this art foundation program, which they call AFO. And seriously, the second year, I'd say probably 70% of those kids I never saw again in my life.
And
maybe even more.
I hear lots of stories of that too, of like people who I've worked with who had brothers or friends who went to VCU. They're like, And they're like, yeah, he didn't really last after the first year. He just came back. I guess that's what happens.
To me, I can believe it, but like, I will say, I was in a special advanced AFO class, which they chose, I think, like very limited people to be in.
Yeah.
And which like is really cool to be like, I'm in the advanced AFO class, but I didn't really broadcast it to others because I don't know. I just didn't want them feel bad or whatever.
It also doesn't help them. So if it doesn't help them, there's no reason to say it.
I didn't really broadcast it. I think I might have only told like one person. They're just like, I didn't even realize that was like a secret thing. I'm because like, yeah, it's
only,
like a secret club.
Yeah, because by announcing that, the only person that's going to win is you, and that's sort of selfish. So if it doesn't really help anyone else, why even?
But you know what the crazy thing is though? Most of those people are still artists that are from my specific, you know, the special AFO class. They're still going at it.
They're lifers.
Yeah, those are like, I would say, yeah, I'd say most of them I still even like see all the time. Like, they're always doing the projects.
Because I feel like there is a bunch of people, you know, that are just like, when you first, they see the romanticism of like, oh, I'm going to be an artist and I'm going to make all this stuff because, you know, that's what it is to be an artist, but not really like, you know, they're like weekend warriors as opposed to lifers. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, I'll do a project now and then. Oh, I don't know. I'm not really, you know, like those people that aren't really like in it, like
in it,
eyes deep. You know what I mean? They're just like,
I mean, they're definitely
like, love the arts and they do all that stuff. But it's just like, are they really willing to bleed? Like, we're willing to bleed.
I was literally bleeding when I chopped my finger off, like the whole finger, but part of it.
But see, those are the things where it's just like, you see people, you see a lot of people, and even with the film people, I see that too. And it's just like, you know, it's like, are you still going to be doing this in 5 years? Because I'm not going to stop doing this. You know what I mean? There's those things where it's just like, so are you going to, like, you see them like, maybe I'll think about doing it. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep on doing this. So I'll see you at the end line if you're actually going to do that. If not, then I'm not going to see you ever again. You know, does that make sense? It's like, you can sense when someone eats and breathes this shit compared to just like, yeah, that's fun. You know, let's do it, you know, maybe again.
I mean, also, I remember even in my dorm, it wasn't even all art students in the dorm, but I remember, you know, you go there for one semester, then you leave for Christmas break. I remember coming back after Christmas break, and, like, almost everybody on our floor was gone or had a new roommate. And I was just like, what the hell happened?
And
like, seriously, I was literally like, this, it felt weird. Like, I was just like, this is strange.
It's like the rapture came.
It really was. And then you don't hear about those people. There's like a couple people from college. I have no idea like what happened.
The art rapture took them away.
Like, I have no idea. Like, and even,
they're like, fuck this stuff. I gotta draw.
Not even during AFO, but one of my roommates like just left during one of the breaks. Like, I came back and her whole room was empty and, like, there was no note or anything. And I was just like, this is college. Like, I'm like, where are these people going? Like, I don't even know. Like, they just left school.
And it's just like, yeah.
I don't know. Like, I guess it's not for them. I don't know if they, like, flunked out or they just couldn't take it or what. But I will say, like, my mental stability during AFO was probably not as good either.
Art Foundation. What's the O?
Art Foundation.
Oh, they just wanted to add the O.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if people still call it that, but that's what we called it back
then. See, like, but everyone who's going through that process, who's hungry for it, those are the people that are, of course, at the beginning, they're like, yeah, I'm doing this. I'm going to do this for free. You know, this is just what I do.
They just want to get the foot in the door.
They just want to get the foot in the door, but also, like, afterwards, you know, they don't have that money part in mind because they have the passion for doing it. But then, like, I feel like after you get out of that school mentality and you realize... You know, and that's the one thing we bring up Good Charlotte, and then of course when they make money, people want to call them sellouts, you know, and like, you know, because that's the punk thing
to
do.
But it's just like, what would Good Charlotte be doing if they were like, if they never got a record deal and they were like still in Waldorf? You know what I mean? Like they would just be like walking around on the streets like fixing cars or something.
But it's interesting because once money is involved, now you're like that the artist mentality, or that old artist mentality was like, now you're a sellout. Because now you're making money, and money is the root of all evil.
I mean,
it's true. There's the people who run the money. Maybe it's the root of all true evil, but there's that necessary evil of like, hey, I don't want to, like, you know, it really depends on the lifestyle you want to live, I guess, too. If you're happy being like that homeless dude, or happy like living, yeah, I guess that's why you say a lot of artists go to Portland or all the low end ones. They can do their job because, you know, then they don't. Then that means maybe they're not.
I didn't say low end ones. I said
cheaper.
They want to like live on a cheap, like, or maybe.
But also they're artists,
though. How's the better way to describe it? They just want to be able to do their work and not have to worry about paying high, you know, bills like New York could be expensive, or DC.
Well, it could not. What do you mean could? It is expensive.
Well,
DC, New York, and LA.
DC, LA, Chicago, maybe San Francisco. You know, those are all places that you really do have to have a sustainable job to live in.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like Portland or Austin, or maybe Richmond, Virginia, you can get by as an artist, I believe.
But that's the situation that comes in. It's like, if you want to be in that area, it's like, well, you should, you know, you got to take care of yourself too. It's like, you need those things to take care of yourself, and you can somehow micromanage. But the tough part for me is always like the people wanting to get something for free. And I feel like that's like
that's probably everywhere though.
Well, of course I want to get stuff for free too. But also,
actually, I would feel like a horrible person if I was treating people like that.
I would definitely. That's one thing I've really tried to be like, no, I actually enjoy paying people who've worked for me, because it's, I don't know, it's fulfilling to be like, hey, we're all making it, man. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I really actually really enjoy giving people as much as I can give them. I know that sounds weird, but I don't know.
But
it's comfortable for me. That means we're all comfortable doing that.
I remember a story maybe even like 5 years ago. I remember you were talking about taking this gig, and you were like, oh, well, this other guy, I don't even remember his name, some other guy, you were like, well, he probably needs it more because he has like family and kids and stuff.
I remember you were saying like, no, fuck that.
And which is true, and I agree that, but then it's also like, well, you need to make your money too. You know what I mean?
Well, in my head, I was...
I didn't say F that,
I remember that I was combating it because like, well, he's probably going to get it because he has wife and kids, so the people offering, they're like, well, he needs the money more. And I always hated that mentality too, because I'm like, well, does that mean my skill level is not as great? But like, you know, there's a time, you know, I just find it more respectful that... You know, people should be getting what they're worth, but I'm also, I know not a lot of people can pay that.
I mean,
it's a tough thing dealing with money.
There are some projects that are low budget, and also some of the most creative projects are low budget, unless you are working for like some type of Coca-Cola advertising thing. But I mean, it's God, what can I just say? It's just being an artist is really hard because
it's also like, I remember when I was first starting out, and this is still trouble for me, but whenever people are talking about like, hey, great, you're open this day, or let's do this, so what's your rate? You know, that's, to me, when people ask you, so what's your rate, that's always a scary, scary moment.
You're like, well, what project are we doing? You don't even know anything about the project sometimes.
No, I never know anything about the project. So what's your rate?
Are you open? What am I getting myself into?
Yeah, and I feel like, but also like, what's your rate? It's almost like you don't want to... You know what I mean? You're like, if I give it too high, they don't want to come in. If I do it too low, then maybe I don't feel like good. You know what I mean? And, or are they just... Because there's been a lot of times where, like, I'd get some random email And of course, you're like, oh, so how much was something for like this? Blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, then you tell them that and you never hear from them ever again. You know, you tell them the rate, you never hear from them ever again. You're like, did I do something? Or were you just using me as leverage? Because people do that. They use you as leverage. You know, these are all those things where, like, we're, I guess, now we're sellouts where we have to deal with now the money-making
part. But that's when the value of your name comes in, because if people are like, oh, man, I really want to work with Tim Burton. Well, it's like, well, you're going to have some money if you want to work with Tim Burton.
I also, like,
just... Because he's name value.
Just recently, one of my favorite producers I work with, and he was talking about, like, getting new clients, or clients talking about how much it's going to cost. And he said flat out, like, when one of the clients is like, can we get it for a little lower? And then he was like, I don't think we can, because if we want to do it right, we got to do it this time. And then, like, he would battle about that. Like, well, I really want to work with you. And then stuff like that. And but they keep on trying to lower the price. And then, you know, he would say to me, it's like, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't be working together. Maybe he's not the right client. You know, and just to have the balls to say that too is really important. Be like, maybe it's not the right client, because if you're just going to keep lowballing me, are you ever going to stop lowballing me? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you're just going to keep them lower. Then you're going to feel crappier as it goes by. And then if you feel like crap, you're not going to produce great work. So he said, like, you know, sometimes you should just watch out for those bad clients.
It's really hard too, because you look at other industries and it seems like, maybe I'm wrong about this, but it just seems like everybody has, like, you know, these rates that are standard or something. And as artists, it's like, who knows how that all works, you know, like...
It's just, you know, whatever average, and I don't know.
I still don't...
But you don't want to be getting less than the person.
Yeah.
You just... There's that thing of like, well... You know what I mean? Because it really is still 24/7.
But it never shuts off.
But never be paid. I recommend this to anyone who makes it to the end of this podcast. Don't get paid on exposure.
Yeah.
Because even Scotty Young, with his posting recently, or in a couple months...
I'll have to read that.
...says about, like... He's like, I'm a skilled professional, been working in the industry for like several years now, made this amount of published pages and paid this, again, from Marvel and DC, all the big ups, and people are still offering me gigs with exposure, paying me with exposure. And he's like, not enough exposure is going to pay for anything. Exposure won't get the flat out payment of exposure will not do anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The only way I will do something for free is if I really know that person and it's a good, and it's a good favor, and I know they're coming from a good heart. And if I don't know who you are, I'm sorry, but like, what? I don't owe you anything.
It's also,
you know?
I'm not gonna lie, it's a heartbreaker to be like, I don't think I can. You know what I mean? It's really a heartbreaker to turn that down if it's not, you know, plausible, or like it doesn't turn out to be good. It's hard, because like, who wants to turn down work? But also, you don't, you know, in the long run, it's like, are you really getting paid? You know what I mean? It's like you're getting paid now with interest minimum with work due. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this is a great, you know, like, oh, you're getting paid. It's like, and whenever they just say, oh, it's just going to be this, it's just going to be this amount of time, just that. But they never consider, oh yeah, this, the, you know, the time beforehand and the time afterwards and all the changes. They never consider that. So it's like, sometimes just is not enough. You know what I mean? That's my thoughts on that. Who's a sellout now? Benji and Joel get the girls they want. Nicole Richie, whatever, and Cameron Diaz, you're set. You know what I mean? If you're not a sellout, if you're not getting what you believe, you're not getting freaking work for that. That's what I say.
I mean, I am, like, definitely of the proponent.
And that's self-respect, too.
Yeah, exactly, of, like, valuing yourself. And it's a very hard thing to do for artists. I mean, I've struggled with it myself, and you just have to believe in yourself and really, you know, keep gaining strength in your own work and keep improving your own work. And that's really, like, the best advice, and you'll make it through. I mean, you'll know.
You gotta go to the end, you know?
You'll know. I mean, several people give up the first year. If you're still with it after 5 years, after 10 years, after 15 years, and you keep going, it gets better, like, every 5 years, supposedly. You know, like, in theory.
Once you keep learning, then you'll understand the ways of, like, business. I'm not saying we're perfect on the business sense, or I'm perfect at all, but it's one of those things where... you know, I'm just always pissed off when people are offering, oh, it's a great portfolio piece or a copy of a DVD or this and that. It's like, can't you offer more? Can't you offer a good time? Can't you offer that and that?
But also, like, as far as, like, the big up artists, like Tim Burton I mentioned, I have a feeling he probably has somebody else handling his business.
Most exactly why. Agents and managers.
He's not managing it all that.
Yeah. He's saying yes or no.
Yeah.
But business and managers.
Or like Matt Groening and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, there you go, ladies and
gentlemen. Work at it.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you made it to the end of this, and I hope you had a good time listening to us bleed about making money or not making money or how to make money and all that stuff. All that good old stuff. This show is brought to you by Stray Productions. Check out their work at astrayproductions.com. They bring you this show every single week. Also, check out my work. Check out me at joecarabeo.com. Also, AstrayJ on Tumblr and Instagram. Also, check out goastray.tumblr.com for my new work. Also, don't forget to check out Karen Bolevsky's amazing work. Curls-studio.com. Then curls-studio.com/curls every Monday for a new comic strip. She's one of the best in the world. All the stuff you can find. Go ahead and Google us. Check out this show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and carolynandjoeshow.com. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. We'll catch you all next week. See you, Carolyn.
See you guys. Thanks for listening.
Be excellent to each other.